Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I'm your host, Shane Bacon, a melancholy Monday here after news of the passing of Arnold Palmer. Mr. Palmer was unlike anyone else that's ever touched a seven iron. He changed the sport of golf for the better in his own way, making the British Open popular to American fans, bringing us a 24-hour network dedicated solely to the sport of golf, playing the game his own way, a unique way that translated to seven major championships and 62 PGA Tour wins. Arnie wasn't just cool, he was the coolest. He was a man's man, a guy's guy, a golfer's golfer. Watching old highlights of Mr. Palmer's like stepping onto a Hollywood set where they're filming an unlikely movie about an actor turned golfer. He was almost too cool to seem real. My dad, who I talked to this morning, you know, the guy that taught me the game of golf, mentioned that Arnold Palmer was his hero, really a testament to the generation that got to watch Arnold Palmer compete week in and week out. It's so many cool events, so many amazing championships, such a run in his career, you know, in late 50s and early 60s when he won those four Masters. He was an animal on the golf course, and of course, such a gentleman off it. I wanted to read this excerpt. This is from Chasing Greatness, a great book about Oakmont. And it's interesting, this is actually about Arnold Palmer not winning the 1973 U.S. Open. But, you know, he struggled a bit late in his round, and this says, with the round finally over, Palmer, sitting in the locker room in his underwear with a cigarette in one hand and a beer can in the other, spoke with a swarm of reporters, many just as dispirited by his back nine collapses, Arnie's army. He said, I won this tournament once when I wasn't really supposed to, and four other times I lost it when I should have won it. I guess that's how things balance out. Not long after, Palmer showered, thanked reporters, volunteers, USGA officials, and fellow club members, then hopped into his Cadillac for the short drive back to La Trobe. I mean, if there's anything that explains Arnold Palmer, cigarette in one hand, beer can in the other, he just lost the U.S. Open. He wanted to win the most, the one at Oakmont, the one he'd circled on his calendar. You know, every time the USGA announced they're going back to Oakmont, he takes a moment to himself, and then he goes and thanks everybody and goes and thanks the officials. I mean, you see so many players these days bypass the media, get into their car, head to the airport, you know, head to their private plane and get out of there. And Arnie, of course, typical Arnold Palmer fashion, you know, took a minute and said thank you to everybody. And I think it's an important reminder of just, you know, the kind of guy he was and the kind of professional he was. I think that's really what he was so good at, is being a professional in every regard. Rest in peace to Mr. Palmer. And more importantly, thank you. And I said it during a couple of the interviews that we have coming up. But, you know, this is a celebration of a man who changed the sport that I love, the passion that I have for golf. A lot of it comes from Mr. Palmer, and it comes from the way he went about it, the way he did this this professional golfer turned, you know, businessman turned face of the game. And he will be missed for sure. And a couple of people to talk about that now coming up on the podcast. First, a big thanks to Bob Ford, of course, a longtime head professional at Oakmont and good friend of Arnold Palmer's, was actually at the airport flying home and took a few minutes just to chat with us about Mr. Palmer, first time he met him. Tells a great story about being in the pro shop at Oakmont, meeting Arnold Palmer at just 19 years old. And then John McGinnis joined me after just to chat about Arnold Palmer. You know, John, a professional golfer, now turned broadcaster and radio host, and great personality of the game, a guy that really cheers up the room when you're around John, has a little Arnold Palmer in him, and I just thought he was such a good person to bring on and chat about that as well. So we'll start with Bob Ford, and then we'll go to John McGinnis, and that'll do it for today's podcast. We're not going to talk Ryder Cup. I thought Mr. Palmer and just talking about his legacy, maybe just for me, I wanted to do it. We'll get to Mr. Ford, and then we'll get to John. And we'll come back later in the week with a little bit more Ryder Cup talk. Because, I mean, it is the Ryder Cup. And I'm sure Mr. Palmer would want us to focus a little bit on the competition as well. But first things first, important to just, you know, pay our respects, if you will. And, of course, today's podcast brought to you by Swing Juice, golf t-shirts for the true golfer. The designs are ever-changing and always on point, with some Ryder Cup-themed shirts up on the website right now. Use the offer code BACON to save 20%. Visit swingjuice.com. Right now. And with that, let's get to Bob Ford. And we welcome into the clubhouse Bob Ford on the podcast prior to the U.S. Open. Of course, talking Oakmont, a different talk today. Obviously, the news of the passing of Arnold Palmer hitting a lot of us close to home. Mr. Ford, you were very close to Mr. Palmer for a long part of your life. I just wanted to ask, first things first, do you remember the first time you met Mr. Palmer and where that was?
Well, Shane, I do. You know, I was 19. I was working in the pro shop at Oakmont, and it was the 1973 U.S. Open. And Arnold walked in to pay homage to Lou Worsham, who was a great friend of his and a former Open champion. And you remember Lou and Buddy Worsham were best friends at Wake Forest. So the Palmers and the Worshams had a great connection. Right behind him, Jack Nicklaus walked in, and Lou came out of the office to say hello to those guys. So three of them were standing in front of me at the counter in the pro shop. And I can imagine being 19 years old and having those three guys. I was speechless, could hardly move. But shook his hand, and, you know, here we are some 40-some years later.
And, you know, you hear so many people talk about the energy that Arnie possessed and really the, you know, how he would command a room and how he seemed like he was everybody's best friend. He made you feel really comfortable. Did you feel that right away? I mean, did you feel that as a 19-year-old that was shocked two of the biggest legends in the history of golf just walked into the pro shop?
Well, Shane, you know, it was a pretty brief encounter at that time. You know, Arnold, as you know, contended for the Open that year, so that was my only encounter with him. But in 78, the PGA came back to Oakmont, and he called down to Lou Worsham again and said, you know, I'd like to come down like Thursday the week before and maybe get around in to any of your assistants want to play. So Brett Upper and I were the assistants at the time, along with his son Rick, and Brett played the front nine. I played the back nine with him, and you know, to be out there playing golf at Oakmont with Arnold Palmer, the legend, you know, in his prime was just incredible. But he just, you know, he just made you feel like he was just one of the guys, and immediately made you feel equal to him and comfortable around him. He was, yeah, as you know, and as everybody knows, he was just that kind of guy.
Yeah, and you know, you read these quotes from some of these players, like Phil Mickelson saying, you know, he looked up to him, he idolized him. Ricky Fowler, you know, calling him my friend. I mean, you see players that have really kind of followed the path that Arnie laid out. I mean, as being a professional golfer, really, you know, shaking hands with fans, interacting with people, signing autographs, taking time out of their schedule, their day to do this. I mean, is Arnold Palmer, in your opinion, the most influential person in the history of golf?
Oh, I don't think, I mean, there's not even somebody on the same list. Yeah, I mean, nobody's like Arnold. Nobody had the impact on the game and started the Champions Tour. He started the Golf Channel. He rose, you know, raised purses, raised awareness of the game. No, I mean, up until the day he died, he was influencing the game in such a positive manner that nobody will ever come close to that.
And when did you become friends or cordial with Arnold Palmer? Because, you know, you meet him as a teenager, but, you know, you're the head pro at Oakmont. I mean, you're in charge of one of the most, you know, distinguished golf courses in all the land. When did you become friendly with Arnie, and when did that kind of relationship take hold?
Well, I think probably the biggest bonding that I had with Arnold was in the 83 Open, Shane. You know, I had organized a practice round with Arnold on Tuesday, and we had Jay Siegel in the group and Ben Crenshaw. And when Ben came to the course that day, he said, you know, I got Miller Barber with me, which meant now we had five. And quite frankly, I felt like the odd guy out. Arnold wouldn't hear of it. And I went to PJ Boatwright, who was running the Open at the time, and said, you know, we got five. You okay? And PJ looked at Arnold, as you and I would have looked at him, and said, yes, sir, King. You guys do whatever you want. Just keep up. And so we went and played. And you know, that week, I think we kind of bonded, and every time I got to play in a major after that, you know, he always invited me to play with him, and just an extraordinary guy.
And you got to play some golf with him at La Trobe. What was going to the course that he grew up on, you know, the place that Arnold Palmer learned to play golf, what was that experience like, getting to go to that golf course with the man, you know, the myth and the legend that was Mr. Palmer?
Well, Shane, you know, going to La Trobe was cool. I mean, you knew you were in Palmer country, and the fact that he stayed in La Trobe and and how down to earth his offices were and his club and his home, and just such a, you know, common, ordinary guy, which is all he ever wanted to be. It was extraordinary. You know, his club up there, many people have been up there. It's just such an epitome of his life and what he did. And you know, then all of a sudden he gets in his car and drives a mile away and goes to the Arnold Palmer, you know, regional airport and goes and flies somewhere and does a commercial and flies home. He's home for dinner time. So just, you know, is an extraordinary life, an extraordinary guy. And just all of us were just so fortunate to know.
And Mr. Ford, I know so many people have great Arnold Palmer stories, so I had to ask, do you have a story about Mr. Palmer that pops up in your head, that the one that you really kind of you know, think about when you think about him?
Well, I think about a lot of the stories that he shared with me, Shane. Sadly, I can't share them with you. But yeah, he just, you know, I mean, he would sit and hold court, you know, at La Trobe, but around the round table with, you know, six or eight of all of us who were just drooling and hanging on every word that he had. And I think, you know, seeing him at La Trobe at the round table, going to Bay Hill and seeing him in that clubhouse at the round table, hanging with the boys, Arnold just wanted to be one of the guys. And he, you know, for somebody who was so iconic in the world and so wealthy, it's just really, you know, a great lesson for everybody that's, you know, in his league at all, just to be a regular guy and just be a guy's guy. And that's what Arnold was. He was just a guy's guy.
Well, Mr. Ford, I appreciate you taking a few minutes. I know you're traveling back home for the funeral and all that, but I appreciate it. I know you're really close to Mr. Palmer. I know it's not the easiest time, but you know, it's a celebration of a legacy as well, because I mean, he was such he lived such a life. I think it's important for everybody to remember that we need to celebrate the life that he had as well. You know, as we kind of mourn in this time. So I appreciate the time, and thanks so much, and safe travels.
You bet. Thanks, Shane. Take care.
Many thanks to Mr. Ford. As I mentioned, you know, took some time away at the airport as he was traveling back home. So thanks so much to Mr. Ford. Love chatting with him anytime I get the opportunity. Obviously, not the most opportune time to talk anything other than Mr. Palmer, but he was very kind to do that. And just a reminder, visit swingjuice.com right now for the most comfortable t-shirts out there. Golf themed, always funny, always on point, always topical. Exactly the kind of t-shirt you'd want to wear post round, before the round, or if a day you're not playing golf. Go to swingjuice.com right now. Use the offer code BACON, and that'll save you 20% on your orders. They have some Ryder Cup shirts up right now. They're perfect for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and beyond. So go check those out, swingjuice.com. And now, John McGinnis. And now, welcome into the clubhouse, John McGinnis, of course, famous for Katrick and McGinnis on tap, 5 to 7 Eastern, Monday through Wednesday on Sirius XM 208 and Channel 93, and following coverage, following the finish of play on Thursdays and Fridays as well. So make sure you tune into the show. John, I wanted to have you on. You're a guy that played professional golf for a number of years, and really looked up to Arnold Palmer just and what he was about and the way he went about life. So first things first, do you remember the first moment you got to meet Mr. Palmer?
Like it was yesterday, actually. 1995. Remember, Arnie played his last U.S. Open in 94. I qualified for the U.S. Open at Shinnecock, and I played my practice round on Tuesday and walked into the locker room, and Arnie had a locker, and the door was open, and there was a suit hanging on the door, and his watch was there, his wallet was there. I mean, it's wide open. Who's going to mess with Arnie's stuff, particularly in a USGA locker room? And I sat there and waited until he was in the shower. I waited until Arnie came out of the shower I waited until he put his clothes on before I went and introduced myself. but yeah, and he was just like what everyone said. But it's, I mean, he immediately comes out and he's messing with guys. And I mean, we as we celebrate his life, you know, he was such a people person. But he had a sharp needle. You know, he'd come at you. And it was fun because getting picked, there's nothing better than getting picked on by the king. So, yeah, that was the very first time I met him. And, of course, I didn't play well enough to be on his radar during my playing days, but I since then have covered the Bay Hill Invitational for years and years. And now, of course, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. And one of my favorite days in broadcasting every year has been the Tuesday, where you get into town, and just after lunch, Arnie sits down with the media and sort of gives his state of the game speech and tells them where he thinks everything is and changes he made to the golf course. And he just would take questions, and there'd be laughter in there. There wouldn't be an empty seat. Everybody in the media wanted to be there and be a part of that. So, yeah, nothing but fond memories from me.
Yeah, and you know, you speak of moments like that, and to me, it encapsulates not only Arnold Palmer, but what Arnold Palmer has been able to do for the sport of golf. You know, when you think about moments throughout the year, every year, that are number one and number two on not just fans' radars, but a media member, you know, somebody that's covered 30, 40, 50 majors. I mean, it's when, you know, Arnie and Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus tee off at the Masters. I mean, it's a must-see moment. And it's amazing, you know, you don't get to go watch, you know, old baseball players pitch, and you don't get to go watch, you know, old basketball players shoot threes and go up on a layup line. But, you know, in golf, you get to watch the king hit a golf shot at a place that he won four times. It's unbelievable, and it's so special to get to see him not only do something like that, but interacting with guys, you know, he battled with for years and years and years. And you're looking at legends that we'll talk about 100 and 200 and 300 years from now as one of the best golfers and really the person that changed the game at a time when golf wasn't the coolest sport in the world.
No, but he certainly did make it so. You know, and most of it had to do with the fact that he was Arnold Palmer, but he was also, for a four-year stretch, he played better golf than just about anybody's ever played.
Right.
You know, he won 29 times in 4 years. Tiger hadn't done that. Vijay Singh didn't do it when he was at his best. Phil Mickelson hasn't done it. Jack didn't do it. Tom Watson didn't do it. The only person to win 29 times in 4 years since Byron Nelson is Arnold Palmer. And it was the fashion in which he did it, the confidence that he brought to the golf course. And I remember having a conversation with him early on in my broadcasting career, 04 or 05, when Tiger was Tiger. And we talked about expectations and what it's like to show up and be expected to win at every golf tournament and how it wears on you. And, you know, he was one of the few people that was uniquely qualified to have that conversation and to explain what downtime is like for that guy that is expected so much of.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned it. You know, so you hear a lot yesterday and today, you know, you're hearing a lot about Arnold Palmer, the man. And it is worth looking, and you mentioned it, looking at the way he played, you know, really from 58 through 64. I mean, if you go look at his finishes in these major championships, I mean, it is Tiger-esque. It is Jack-esque. I mean, it's Arnold-esque because he did it himself and was really before the times there. But, you know, this was a guy that smiling, talked to fans, interacted, but he was out on the golf course wanting to kick your butt. And I mean, for a good stretch, early in the middle of his career, he did just that to some of the best in the world. And you know, he wasn't afraid of anybody. I think when you look at players today, you know, that tenacity that Arnold Palmer have, you know, you don't see it as much in some of these players. I think Arnold was out there to win, and I mean, he didn't like losing. I read a couple of books, you know, on the way. You know, he felt after. He was still gracious to fans, but he wanted to win events. And I mean, you know, he was at, you know, at Oakmont trying to win U.S. Open there for his fans. I mean, this was a guy that did it and did it for a stretch that was as impressive as anything we've really ever seen in golf.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't overstate how well he played. You can't overstate the influence that he's had on every athlete that's come after. He and Mark McCormick invented the corporate endorsement. I mean, it existed on some level before them, but, I mean, they perfected it, and it's been copied by the next four generations, really. And, you know, we're hearing about $10 million to sign with Nike. Well, that's all because of what Arnold Palmer did back in the 60s.
Right. I was going to ask. I asked Bob Ford this same question, and I love hearing these stories because they're just always so fun. Do you have a particular Arnold Palmer story that sticks out in your mind from your experiences with him when you got to play and really post-playing?
It all would be after I played. And, there were a few interviews that I got to do with him. I did have a beer or two in the locker room there at Bay Hill when he was holding court. But my personal interactions with him always came in an interview. And I actually told the story last night. The guy who taught me how to play, who was a contemporary of Arnie's and played the tour with him briefly, died a few years ago. And I was scheduled to do an interview with Arnie on a day at a funeral. And it was at 11 o'clock. The funeral was an hour away, and it was at 1 o'clock. And when I called the office to record the interview, they said, you know, Arnie asked if he could push it back. He had to run home. He wasn't feeling well. And so I ended up thinking to myself, Carl DeZern would want me to wait and do this interview with Arnold Palmer, not come to his funeral. And that's what ended up happening. And it was quite a moment. And Arnie wasn't very happy with me when I told him the story off the air, but but he understood.
Yeah,
I said, no, this is exactly what Carl wants me to be. I promise you.
Yeah, and I mean, he's everybody you talk to has these little moments where Arnold made them feel special. I think that's something that really has come to the forefront, not just in the last day and a half, but you know, in the last 5 years, last 10 years. Everybody has a little story of Arnie making them feel bigger than they are or they were, and you know, it's so unique. I'm not sure we've seen a superstar in golf, you know, understand the power they possess like Arnold Palmer did, because he was able to influence people unlike anybody else, maybe in sports. And I think the legacy that he leaves in that regard is something that, you know, we randomly see a player do something like that. Phil Mickelson able to kind of, you know, command the moment with fans, you know, out there. I feel like Ricky Fowler a little bit like that as well. I mean, do you think there's anybody that you see in today's game that has a little bit of that Arnold Palmer in him?
Phil watched Arnie and decided, you know, I've heard people in his camp tell the story that, you know, that he made a conscious decision to try to be more like Arnold Palmer, with fans, with, autographs, with all of those things. And I think we can all agree that, Phil has transformed himself in that regard and has become one of the game's great ambassadors. I think Ricky will certainly get there. I see it in this younger generation, these kids that have come along, and you know, they get it. And I think they get it because of, it probably starts with Arnie, but those that came next, Peter Jacobson, you know, taught it to the next generation. And I think that these kids are getting to the point where they're understanding just how fortunate they are to be doing what they're doing, and that all stems from on high with Arnie.
Yeah, and I sent some pictures out last night. I mean, I think that it's worth noting, this guy was an absolute stud in his prime. He was good looking. He was athletic. He dressed well. I mean, he was tan. It's unbelievable to look at some of these pictures of Arnold Palmer in his prime and go, that guy played golf? I mean, he looked like a model almost.
Yeah, my favorite one is standing beside the convertible Cadillac and the turnabout at Augusta. And with the red Cadillac and the contrast with the green jacket, that was my favorite one, although there's so many that we got to see last night on Golf Channel and Sports Center. I mean, yesterday was an NFL Sunday. And there were lots of big stories. And then the tragedy with Fernandez, the 24-year-old pitcher from Miami. And all of those stories ended up taking a backseat to this one on the national platform. And I was curious to see how that was going to play. But they understood how big Arnold Palmer was. and how important he was to all sports, not just a game of golf.
Yeah, and it's interesting timing, too. I mean, you know, nobody can ever predict anything like this or expect it. But, you know, Arnold passes the week before the Ryder Cup, which is a very, very, very big sporting event, a very big, you know, international competition. The Ryder Cup will feel a bit different this week, at least I think so. You're going to hear Arnold Palmer's name over and over and over again. I mean, do you sense that this American team will be able to rally behind, you know, Mr. Palmer and what he did for golf, what he did for American golf, what he did for international golf throughout the 3 days of competition this week at Hazeltine?
Yeah, I like the American team from a betting standpoint. I like the American team. I think that this is just one heck of a team that we've assembled. And I trust Davis to do the parts of the job that he can control, which obviously he did an incredible job on the parts that he controlled 4 years ago when he had the 4-point lead. You know, you can't really do anything about the singles.
Right.
You just send your boys out there and play. But, you know, when you're matching guys up and doing the things that you can't do, I like Davis, and yes, I think that they're going to tell their Arnie stories, and they're going to, they're going to certainly look to him. I think, you know, Arnold was maybe one of the most civil gentlemen that has ever lived, and you contrast that with not only the Ryder Cup coming up, but there's a little political thing going on tonight that will be absent civility. I can guarantee you, and the contrast of that, I find to be terribly interesting as well.
Yeah, well, it's been an interesting last day and a half. You know, I mentioned to Bob Ford, and I'll say it again. You know, there's a celebration to be had in a sense because, you know, Arnold Palmer lived such a full life. He was able to do so much for so many people, and he changed an entire sport for the better. And it's really incredible to think back on a guy that's just been doing this for decades and decades. And you know, rest in peace, Arnie, but thank you. And I think that's what we all can agree on is thank you for just being you because, you know, he did so many things for so many people. My dad called me this morning and said, you know, Arnold Palmer was my hero. And I mean, you know, hearing that from my 67-year-old father is just interesting to hear. So, John, I appreciate you coming on and chatting with me just a little bit about it. I know it's not the easiest thing to talk about, but Arnie, you know, again, would just appreciate, I'm sure, all the kind words.
Well, thank you, and keep up the good work. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. And that'll do it for the Monday podcast here on the Clubhouse. Many thanks to Bob Ford and John McGinnis, them jumping on kind of last minute to talk about Mr. Palmer. Make sure you have an Arnold Palmer today, just as a little respect at your own house during lunch or dinner. He was the coolest, and I've said it a few times, but there's no other way to describe him. He will be missed. And personally, the moment that I will remember the most of Mr. Palmer in my career was my first Masters, rushing out to see Jack and Gary and Mr. Palmer hit those tee shots the first year they did it, and getting to watch that whole thing transpire was just one of those dreams come true in your career. So that'll do it for this week. As I mentioned, we'll have a Ryder Cup podcast coming up on Wednesday or Thursday, so look out for that. Subscribe if you will. Visit swingjuice.com. And again, thanks to both of the guests this week. It was really kind of them to come on.